Another great spot to check out is the, how would you say this, Jill?
Cruachan.
Okay. Hi everyone, and welcome to episode 42 of our 50 Reasons to Visit Ireland from Crystal Travel and Tours in Boston. My name is Caitlin, and in case you're just tuning in right now and have not heard me talk about it at all before, I lived outside of Belfast for 5 months back in 2012.
And in case you are accent deaf and you've also never heard me before, I am Joe, and I was born and raised in Ireland on a farm in a little place called Ballinasheenach.
We've made it our mission this year to give you a new reason each week to go to Ireland, and we're very excited about that.
We've focused on various themes, and within those themes, we're counting up from 1 to 50. We do not have a theme today, because this one is on its own.
Yes.
And the reason, number 42, is mythology and folklore.
Woo, woo.
I am genuinely excited about this one.
Me too.
Yeah.
This was really fun to learn about.
Yeah, it's something I've dove more and more into, I suppose, in the last few years.
Mm-hmm.
With, again, I haven't mentioned Game of Thrones in like two episodes, so with Game of Thrones, it's medieval mixed with kind of magic / mythology / folklore and stuff,
yeah.
Or little pieces of that, and passed off as kind of real world stuff, so
sure.
That's it's fantasy basically, so
definitely.
A lot of this is fantasy, or it's stuff that may have happened in the past, or some semblance of it may have happened in the past, and it's just been twisted through history to be magic, unless of course you believe in magic, in which case then awesome.
That is cool. Good
yeah.
for you. And you should keep believing in magic. Don't let anybody tell you otherwise, right?
I'm a magician.
Of course, duh. I'm not even really here. I'm a figment of your... Yeah, I don't know.
Also, I'm a complete loser now enough to... I have made up friends in a made up podcast that doesn't actually go anywhere. Is that what you're telling me?
Illusion.
Wow.
So, Irish mythology is something that you don't hear as much about when you compare it to maybe Greek mythology and things like that. So what makes Irish mythology stand out? Well, unlike other forms of mythology around the world, Irish mythology features gods that are kind of surrounded in a bit of mystery. In Greek mythology, for example, everything is explained and it's pretty well structured and organized. Instead, Irish mythology focuses more on the activities of mortals. A lot of things seem to happen without rhyme or reason, and characters sort of seem to just do things. But it's very interesting,
mm-hmm.
and there is a lot of symbolism. Also, unlike other forms of mythology, there's no real story behind creation in Irish mythology, which is something important to note. It just kind of seems like the world always was, which
yes.
fascinates me. You know, it's... You look around and you look at other cultures and there's a beginning, you know,
mm-hmm.
whether it's a sun god or whether it's this or that, and Irish mythology is different in that sense, so it makes it stand out that way.
Yes.
So when you think of Irish mythology, you think of folklore, you think of fairy tales and things like that. Of course, we have to acknowledge the number one thing that everybody will have come to mind, leprechauns.
Or leprechauns, as some Americans like to say.
Well, there you go.
Which is definitely not what it should be.
I've never heard that before.
You've never heard an American call it leprechauns? Or leprechauns?
That hurts my ears.
Leprechaun.
Leprechaun.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, they're two of my favorites, and by that I mean least favorites.
Who says that? People in Massachusetts?
I don't. Not anybody I've met, just videos online and stuff.
I mean, maybe I heard it one
yeah.
time. I don't know.
That's awful.
So... We all know about the leprechaun, dressed in all green, loving to collect gold stored in a pot at the end of the rainbow. If a human catches one, he or she gets 3 wishes granted, all that jazz. But have you ever asked, why leprechauns? Why is this a thing? Well, we've talked about immigration before, and people leaving Ireland to go to other countries. Xenophobia, or racism and dislike of other cultures, was something the Irish faced on a daily basis. In order to get past this, St. Patrick's Day was slowly but surely modified to be more inclusive for more groups of people and ultimately paint the Irish in a more positive light. While this may not have been such a big thing in Ireland itself, for America, it was really a first impression of all things Irish. So the Americans saw the leprechaun as the iconic Irish symbol, and we'll talk more about it here. In fact, the book Darby O'Gill and the Good People, written in 1903 by Hermione Templeton, was many Americans' first introduction to Ireland, and it was, of course, about not Lepretians, but leprechauns. This book did a lot to fight xenophobia. It was even made into a movie by Disney back in 1959. Leprechauns weren't the first little people to exist, however. Mythology and legend have seen Greek pygmies, Norse dwarves, German kobolds, and more. Ireland has been said to have little cobblers, house spirits, and fairies galore. So there are little people, little creatures, little things all over if you pay attention to mythology.
Yes, in Irish especially, though, with the... Definitely. As you just said there, with the spirits and the fairies.
As I just said, yeah.
I'd like to go over some stuff you say to...
No, that's okay.
To give it...
Oh, I'm just teasing you. I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
How dare you.
Go ahead.
That is xenophobic towards Irish people.
I should just leave right now.
Yeah, the thing I find interesting about that is the leprechaun was introduced to fight xenophobia, and now it's almost seen as a symbol of racism towards Irish people.
It's
so
a reverse,
it's
yeah.
Quite interesting how that happens.
Definitely. So there were beings back then in mythology and folklore that were an asset for everyday home life. Like, for example, there was a small drunken man called a cluricon, a cousin of a leprechaun, of course, whose sole job was to guard one's wine cellar. So.
And he'd fight you if you didn't.
Yeah.
If you tried to.
Oh, yeah. Oh, he'd put his dukes up and...
You know, the Notre Dame, you know, the Notre Dame mascot that's actually a cluricon.
Is it?
Making it up, but you can tell these things to Americans at bars and it's going to
well,
be...
clearly yeah. It works even when you're not at a bar.
Yep.
So the first written story to include leprechauns was actually the saga of Fergus MacLeody. Fergus was a king of Ulster who fell asleep on the beach and awoke to some little men dragging him to the water to actually drown him. He catches them before they can do any damage, and they offer him 3 wishes in exchange for their freedom. But they weren't even called leprechauns in this story. They were actually called Lucrepine. This is said to mean small body or even small stooping Luke, one of the majestic gods who once ruled Ireland. Have you heard of that at all before, Joe?
No.
No?
Sorry.
But you're hearing it now. Irish gods were depicted as little people. Sorry. But what about the drinking and the pots of gold and the rainbows? Well, a lot of that just comes down to folklore being passed down for years and years and playing the telephone game where something says something to someone else and something to someone else, and then a story gets more attributes and more details, and then here we are having
also,
a leprechaun.
I think a lot of it down to the drinking part was just that the Irish do like to drink.
Of course.
And the leprechaun is supposedly the embodiment of Irish people and not at all xenophobic, so they're not going to impose stereotypes on leprechauns and stuff like that.
Sure, sure, yes.
Sorry, we probably shouldn't have started the episode with leprechauns. It gets under my skin a little bit.
Sorry, but I thought this would be a good intro because...
It has to be. We can't skip it.
Exactly. We could go from talking about this to things that are also involved in Irish mythology and folklore, because it's not just about leprechauns. There's so much more to it. Ireland is well known for fairies. These aren't like the fairies that you think of when you hear the story of Peter Pan, though. Irish fairies can take any form they wish, but usually they choose the human form. They tend to love bringing misfortune and bad luck to mortals. But there are all kinds of fairies, not just one kind, not just one vision, mind you, or I guess in your head if you close your eyes and think of a fairy, there's all sorts. The banshee is one that's very popular. It also means fairy woman, or woman of the fairy mound. This is a woman who carries the omen of death. She's basically the Grimm from Harry Potter, only in female form, and a bit more badass, I would say. She was once a young woman who was brutally murdered, and now her soul cannot rest. Sometimes she's dressed in rags, sometimes she's a young and beautiful woman dressed in white, sometimes she's washing out bloody clothing. Of course, no matter what she's wearing, the banshee is universally known for letting out a horrible cry. Any family that hears the cry must face death. Families who are really needing to watch out, because of course every family, no family is immune, but there are certain families that are like really, really like, you best watch out for the Banshee.
Yeah.
They are O'Grady, O'Neill, O'Brien, O'Connor, and Kavanaugh. So
I don't see Dunn in there, so I'm not worried.
I don't see Potts either. No.
But you're an O'Brien, you said.
I am an O'Brien. So. But am I,
though? Stop trying to escape the Banshee and just accept imminent death. Okay?
So, King James I of Scotland claimed he was approached by a Banshee, and not long after, he died at the hand of the Earl of Athol. So, the Banshee has been at work throughout history, throughout time. Mm-hmm. Joe doesn't believe in any of this stuff. I don't really either, but I think it's still interesting. The Banshee said to brush her hair with a silver comb. So there's superstition stating that you should never pick up a comb if you find it on the ground. So don't do that.
Oh my god.
I know.
I just
realized. Did you just do it yesterday?
Oh my god.
I told you.
This morning.
I've warned you about
this. It's like she knew we were doing
this
episode this morning.
It's like she knew. Multiple wheels from a Banshee indicate someone really holy and of great importance is about to die. The Banshee wasn't always said to be evil or bad, though. Originally, she was seen as a protector of good people, and her wails were said to ward off evil spirits. So it's interesting how, basically, night and day kind of went from one extreme to the other. So where does this legend come from? Well, no one is exactly sure, but it more than likely stems from an activity called caning. Professional women were hired to lament and mourn at the funeral of an important Irish clan member. They were often paid in alcohol, because why not? Well, the church didn't like this, and so they were forced to become the Banshee. And this would, of course, become Banshee years later. Saying it so many times quickly, it becomes Banshee.
So, another thing I've heard about Banshee.
Mm-hmm.
Banshee sounds like Banonchi.
Mm-hmm.
Condensed down, Banonchi is the woman of the house.
Mm.
And there's another school of thought that Banshee is basically that word, meaning woman of the house, and it's like a dead woman of the house that can't give up her house and just haunts it, basically.
Wow.
And that's why shrieks. Another point before you continue on to where we can find Banshees, it's interesting looking at shows and movies that we watch nowadays. You talk about Harry Potter all the time, I talk about Game of Thrones, and already like twice in this I'm looking at it going, surely the Banshee was a part of the author's thinking in this, like the Shrieking Shack in Harry Potter.
Mm-hmm.
Or if anybody has read the Game of Thrones books, Lady Stoneheart in Game of Thrones is another, you know, somebody who comes back from the dead, basically having been murdered horribly, and exacts vengeance and screams a lot.
Yeah.
So yeah,
there you go. So where might you find a Banshee in Ireland? Well, Dunluce Castle up in Northern Ireland is a great place. We've told the story of Maeve Roe, who was betrothed to a man she didn't love and locked away in a tower. When she told her father she was going to marry the man she loved instead, Reginald. She escaped and tried to flee to marry Reginald, but they were both killed by the thrashing waves of the Irish Sea. She's said to haunt the castle as she searches for her long-lost love.
And I don't know if we did this at the end of the leprechaun section, but obviously you can find leprechauns at the end of every rainbow in Ireland, so...
There you go.
There's that.
You can just go on a whole mythology folklore hunt, right?
Yes.
So pookas are another type of fairy that wants to create havoc in the mortal world. They're not necessarily screaming, per se, but they...
Jerkweeds.
Jerkweeds, yes, exactly, you got it. On good days, the pooka might destroy a farm, tearing down fences and disturbing the animals. On bad days, the pooka would stand outside of the farmhouse and call people by name. Anyone unwise and stupid enough to come out would be carried away by the pooka. Pookas have been blamed for many shipwrecks along Ireland's coast. They're a primary figure of Irish folklore and are said to take the shape of animals as well as humans. A famous pooka in pop culture is the Cheshire Cat from Alice in Wonderland, actually.
Mm.
The Hurling Club in Pittsburgh is known as the Pittsburgh Pookas.
Wow.
Shout out. Oh, yeah. Where might you find a pooka? Well, the pooka is a creature of the mountains and the hills. In County Down, it's said to manifest itself as a disfigured goblin.
And goblins are ugly at the best of times. Yeah. So, disfigured one.
There's nothing cute about goblins, even when their figures are all put together.
I bet you'd still be excited to meet one, though.
Of course I would. It's a goblin. Why not? Have a little meet and greet. In Waterford and Wexford, the puka is said to be an eagle. In Roscommon, it's a black goat, or feral goat, which we've talked about before in other episodes. I just think that's funny.
I feel like there's been
so many feral goats.
Two more feral goat mentions in this whole podcast series than I needed.
Feral goats. They're feral, and they're goats. But Irish myth and folklore consists of more than just fairies. You've got the Tuatha De Danann, this godlike race around which a lot of Irish mythology revolves. Very prominent, very important. They were originally a tribe of Nebin that decided to spread out from Ireland and see the world. They meet a goddess, Danu, and she sends them to learn in the four mystical cities of knowledge. After exploring these cities, they return to Ireland as gods, or the Tuatha De Danann.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So, some more about these people and the effects they have in Irish mythology and folklore. You've got Dagda's harp. Dagda was a high king of the Tuatha De Danann who had a large, beautiful harp. During a war, a rival tribe stole his harp for themselves. He followed the tribe and called out to the harp. The harp suddenly came to Dagda, and he began to play it. He started playing what was called the music of tears, and suddenly the tribe began to sob. Then he played the music of mirth, and everyone began to laugh. And then, finally, our story really gets exciting when Dagda plays the music of sleep so that he can escape unharmed with his harp. And now, Joe, I know you just said there are a lot of things that remind you of famous fantasy literature like Game of Thrones, and for me, Harry Potter. And when I was learning about this, it reminded me of the three-headed dog from Harry Potter.
I have said it a number of times that I don't read the script, and this does not prove it, but it's very interesting to note that we had the same.
Yeah, so it reminded me of three-headed dog and how he needs music to fall asleep. Now, I think in the book they use a flute, but I'm pretty sure in the movie they use a harp. So.
I can guarantee you it was pulled from there as well.
Yeah.
Because the more you look into these books, the more it's Irish and English mythology, folklore, fantasy, history. Yep.
Very cool. So you've also got the Children of Lear. This story comes from the Irish mythological cycle. Once upon a time, in a land far, far away.
Called Ireland.
You had Lear. He was the lord of the sea, and he had a wife and four children. Things took a turn when his wife died, and he married her sister. And apparently that's what she did back
as
in those
days.
As
you do,
days.
Yeah.
He really did, which is kind
of
creepy.
Again,
and
Game of Thrones. That's what happens every time.
There you go. She was jealous of Lear's children and wanted to get rid of them. So one day, she took them to the lake, because that's what you do, too. While they were swimming, she put a spell on them and turned them into swans. The only thing that could reverse the spell was the sound of a Christian bell. For years and years, the children, slash swans, swam from lake to river to stream, hoping someone, anywhere, someone would ring a bell, please. Well, 900 years later, the children were saved when St. Patrick came to Ireland and rang the Christian bell.
I completely forgot how that story ended.
The hero.
So that's
the hero.
Not as fun as I thought it was. I remember it being a great story of my childhood.
And then St. Patrick burst in and he took the bell.
Cut all the heads off all the snakes and freed the swans and turned them back into children again.
Yep, and everybody got drunk and it was great.
Yeah.
So, Finn McCool is something that we have talked about a bit before. He's a giant. He's pretty cool. He had his own causeway, which we've discussed. But there are more legends than just that one. Another popular tale in Irish mythology talks about a salmon who knew all of the world's knowledge. Finn chose to eat the salmon because he wanted to gain all of the wisdom. While he was cooking this salmon, juice and fat and stuff and things that it's gross when you're cooking squirted out.
Have you ever cooked salmon, Caitlin?
I have not. No. Yes, I do all the time. Squirted out at Finn, and he burned his thumb. So to try to stop the burning, he sucked his thumb and instantly learned the knowledge the salmon carried. From then on, any time Finn sucked his thumb, he gained whatever knowledge he was seeking. So, kind of weird. I mean, think about it. If, like, what if you're, like, dating this guy, and he's like, oh, he's just so smart, Mom, and then he, like, starts sucking his thumb, and then he can, like, you know, just...
A man baby that's wiser
than... the meaning of the universe. Exactly. Like, just so weird. But anyway, there's also a statue of the Salmon of Knowledge in Belfast, which we talked about in Reason 35. Moving on from Finn McCool, we've got Satanta. This is an Irish mythological hero who appears in the stories of the Ulster Cycle. So, Satanta is a celebrated war hero who single-handedly, mind you, defended Ulster against armies and won. During battle, he was said to become unrecognizable and a monster, knowing neither friend nor foe. He was a beast. And we're about to talk about him some more.
Satanta was also known by a different name.
Mm-hmm.
And this also ties into a number of different other things that we're talking about, and this is why Irish mythology excites me a little bit more, I guess. So while he was born Satanta, he gained a better known name as a child after killing Cullen's fierce guard dog in self-defense and offered to take its place until a replacement was reared. So basically he was approaching this castle or whatever it was, Cullen's stronghold, whatever it was, I'm not sure, and there was a dangerous hound outside, and Satanta was holding a hurl and a slither, or some sort of a ball, I'm guessing, not a slither like they have these days, and he took aim at the dog and smashed the ball with the hurl, and it went, I think, down the dog's throat, but anyway, it killed the dog either way. And because Satanta was such a nice fella and liked his dogs and all that, he offered to take the hound's place and protect Cullen's castle, we'll call it. So from then on, he was known as Cú Chulainn, which is the Hound of Cullen. And Cullen is the guy. Cú is hound. So then at the age of 17, as Caitlin said, he defended single-handedly Ulster against the armies of Queen Maeve of Connacht, who we talked about in the last episode, as being buried in Sligo, and she is famous for the next story Caitlin is going
to
tell.
And a small note to that story that you just told that's not really all that important but kind of interesting is they originally invited him over to their place, and then they forgot that they'd invited him, and they put the dog out to guard the place.
Mm.
So I don't know why you would ever do that, but they did. So
interesting.
Yeah, they were quite the forgetful bunch back then. So yes, we're going to talk about Queen Maeve in the story of the Brown Bull of Cooley. The story starts out with Maeve, of course, the Queen of Connacht, and her husband Ailill, would you say?
Sure.
Ailill. So the two have an argument over who has the most riches. They would have an equal amount were it not for the White Bull that Queen Maeve's husband owned. So Maeve sent her soldiers to search high and low for a bull of equal or better status. They find one, while they're searching, of course, in the peninsula of Cooley. At first, the bull's owner did not want to give him up, but they fought him and eventually returned with the bull. So that's kind of sad. I mean, this guy might be really attached to the bull. They might be best friends, and then these soldiers come and they're like, nope, Queen Maeve wants your bull, gotta take it from you. And then,
don't think he gave a shit about the bull's feelings, to be honest. I think
he might.
Cattle were a status symbol.
Did you
or
know
a
him? I don't
symbol
think
of
you
riches
knew
and stuff. People
probably,
cared about money at the time.
Probably gonna eat him too, so
yeah.
That's the real thing. Anyway, Satanta, as we talked about a little bit ago, did a lot of this fighting. And later on, the Queen's bull fought the King's bull and won.
And that's the best part of the story, but anyway, yeah.
Rawr.
Yeah.
Bulls do not growl, though. Do they? What do they do?
No.
What do? They just charge at each other.
Yes.
Arr.
Probably. I don't know. I've never seen bulls fighting each other, so.
I've seen bull fights, but not against each other. Just a bull and a...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. So, another interesting bit of Irish mythology is St. Bridget of Kildare. According to myth and folklore, Bridget's parents sold her to a druid, whom she later converted to Christianity. When she was set free, her father tried to marry her off to the King of Ulster. She'd go on to found the first nunnery in all of Ireland. Bridget is said to have changed water to beer for a leper colony and provided enough barrels of beer for 18 colonies. Kind of cool.
Mighty woman.
I know. Not just water to wine, but water to beer. She celebrated on February 1st on what is known as Feast Day in Ireland, as well as in parts of Scotland and England. Now, did you hear much about St. Bridget when you were...
Yeah, St. Bridget's Day was a big day when we were in national school, and we used to, every St. Bridget's Day, we'd always tell the stories of St. Bridget.
Okay.
So I noticed stories are missing there. St. Bridget's cross is a big thing in Ireland.
Okay.
Because I think she used to use it to teach Christianity, I guess.
All right.
But it was made out of rushes, which are, you know, like pieces of grass that you can dry into straw almost. But they'd grow in like a marsh or ponds and stuff like that. And we used to bring in loads of them into class on February 1st, and we'd make St. Bridget's crosses and we'd tie them together and bring them home.
Huh.
And that was nice. But one of the main legends of St. Bridget, and they were definitely legends rather than real stories, sorry to say, but St. Bridget's cloak was a big one. And it's a story of how she acquired the land to build her monastery in Kildare. And it's often regarded as one of the first miracles associated with her. So she approached the King of Leinster asking him for some land to build her monastery. The place she selected in Kildare was perfect. It was near a lake, there was water available, there was a forest for wood, and there was fertile grass to grow crops. The king refused. So Bridget had not put off, was not put off by the refusal. Instead, she and her sisters prayed with the king's heart, prayed that the king's heart would soften. And she made a request again. This time she said, "Give me as much land as my cloak will cover." Now, cloaks are not that big. So, seeing her small cloak, he laughed and granted the request. However, Bridget had instructed her four helpers each to take a corner of the cloak and walk in opposite directions, north, south, east and west. As they did this, the cloak began to grow and spread across many acres, and she now had sufficient land to build her monastery on. The king and his entire household were shocked and feeling terrible, I guess, and they realized that this woman was truly blessed by God, and the king became a patron of Bridget's monastery, assisting her with food and money and gifts, and he later converted to Christianity. You'll find a lot of these legends are steeped heavily in Christianity, Catholicism, etc.
Yeah.
Because that was the way Ireland was at the time, I guess.
Sure.
So, yep.
And people use stories to pass down all of these.
They sure do, and they get more and more ridiculous as time goes on, and then we continue to tell them to this day.
Yes, we do. So another saint that comes to mind when you think of all things Irish is...
St. Valentine, right?
Of course, St. Valentine, absolutely. St. Patrick. He was born in Britain to a wealthy family and then kidnapped and sold into slavery and sent to Ireland. While he was a slave, St. Patrick converted to Christianity. And once he became free, he spent the rest of his life teaching the Irish about the religion. Once he died, St. Patrick and the Christian religion were pretty much forgotten in Ireland. A lot of people don't know, but St. Patrick wasn't actually deemed a saint until long after his death. It wasn't until years later that monks began telling the tale of St. Patrick banning all the snakes from Ireland that he earned a lot of popularity and buzz. And as we pointed out before, the snake part is simply a tale because there were never any snakes in Ireland. Unless, of course, the term snake is purely symbolic, and in that case, there's a much deeper meaning. This guy has his own day. You might even say he deserves his own podcast episode. Well, we're way ahead of you. You can check out Reason 9 if you haven't already for more on the life of St. Patrick. Let's say you're going to Ireland. Where could you learn more about the island's ancient myths and folklore? Well, the Hill of Tara is a great spot to check out. This is the ancient seat of the High Kings. It symbolizes ancient splendors, legendary deeds, memories of the kings and champions, and the Christian saints. And of course, it's near the River Boyne in County Meath. Another great place to check out is the Cruachan Eye Visitor Center in Dublin. Here you can learn of the mysticism surrounding the many monuments on display. You'll explore Irish history through the ages, and walk the land of Celtic warrior queen Maeve. You'll also see where the great bulls fought in their epic battle in the cattle raid of Cooley, and follow the druid's quest for knowledge to the sacred triple spring of healing. You can stand where the Gaelic king stood to fight invading tyranny and receive their rightful crowns. So, I know this will not be Joe's favorite, but you can't talk about places to check out with mythology and folklore without talking about the National Leprechaun Museum in Dublin. This place speaks for itself, but basically you take a voyage back to childhood and immerse yourself in a world of myth and legend and the little people. Something else that's kind of cool and not necessarily a building or anything that's man-made, which makes it cooler, is fairy trees, which are found throughout Ireland. The proper non-folklore name of these trees is hawthorn. Fairy trees are also referred to as gentle bushes. A big no-no is mentioning fairies when you're near a fairy tree. It's also bad luck to cut one down. In 1999, work was interrupted on a main road from Limerick to Galway because a fairy tree stood in its path. Drivers were rerouted and construction was delayed for 10 years, Joe. Crazy.
I mentioned our field called Carrickheel last week. There's a fairy tree in the center of that.
Nice.
And it's really annoying because it's like a perfectly shaped rectangular field almost. And when you're cutting silage in it, it's so easy to go up and down and over and back cutting, and the big machines go in and around. Fairy tree in the middle of it, and they go around it, and it's just, it makes it really annoying. But nobody's ever going to cut it, I don't think. So yeah,
they're very cool.
Not as cool as that story where it delayed construction for 10 years or anything.
Right?
Yeah.
And of course, these aren't the only places you can check out in Ireland that will be oozing with mythology and folklore. You've got places like Blarney Castle, Giant's Causeway, the Rock of Cashel, and basically every direction you look in Ireland will have some sort of ancient myth or piece of folklore attached.
And I'm never not going to mention Uisnech at this stage, the Hill of Uisnech. There's a lot of different legends and folklores there. I've gone through it before, I won't go through it much, but for example, the ancient sun god Lu was supposed to have met his mortal end there. Lu, spelled L-U-G-H, was one of the Tuatha Dé Danann that you mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And he was killed by guys named McCool and McCarrollt and whatever. Not Finn McCool, but earlier versions or iterations of that, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
That's where he is supposedly died. And the Irish word for August is Lunasa.
Mm.
And that's his name comes from. Or that's where the Irish for Lunasa or August comes from, is from the sun god Lu. And Baltana is celebrated there as well, which is the Irish for May, but it was like a spring festival to celebrate surviving winter, and all of the tribes and all the clans from all across the country would come and meet there and all that. So there's so much
definitely
history and cool stuff that, you know, where Ireland came from and where all of these words and where all of these traditions come from. It's really cool.
Absolutely. So let's move on to trivia. Now, again, we need to make note here that Sabrina did not see the script before she wrote this out.
Well, that's good news.
You will know some of these. Which old Irish legend had four children turned into swan by the wicked
children of Lear?
All right. What was the Tir na n'Og?
Oh, we didn't talk about Tir na n'Og at all.
We didn't.
Tir na n'Og was the land of eternal youth. Or something along those lines, basically. It was where people never got old, anyway.
Yep, correct.
See, there's so many stories we didn't even get anywhere close to.
I know,
yeah.
We should do a part two. In Irish folklore, complete the name. Nile of the Nine...
Hostages.
All right, okay. In Irish old wives' tales, once married and on the wedding night, whichever one of the newly married pair goes to sleep first will be the first to what?
Die.
Wow, you're good. And you'll get this one. What was the most important fish in Celtic mythology?
The salmon of knowledge.
Or wisdom, yes. Very good.
Wow, 100%.
Yeah, I know, nice. That means we covered most of them well, except one of the
How
things.
How dare you?
I guess. All right, so this tour for the reason, our pots and plans, has us taking 7-day Ireland's Ancient East tour. You'll spend 2 nights in Meath, you'll spend a night in Cashel, 2 nights in Kilkenny, and 1 night in Wicklow. Now, we've talked about the ancient East in Ireland before. This is an area thriving and booming with stories, legends, folklore, myth, you name it. There's so much to uncover, and it's right there waiting. Let's say you want to see some other parts of Ireland, too. You might maybe want to see Kilkenny for a few nights and a little Wicklow, but you don't really need to see Cashel or what have you. Well, we can help you out with that. We're happy to customize this and any of our self-drive tours into the trip of a lifetime. And you can find this and the other tours we've talked about in our past episodes at crystal-travel.com/reasons. Woohoo!
Another one bites the dust.
42 down. We thank you so much for listening today. That's all we have. We hope that you'll stay tuned for reason number 43, coming out on Monday, November 6th. Wow, we're in November.
The year is basically over.
What is happening? So we're going to continue with our standalones from now up until reason 50. And now, Joe, if you'd be so kind as to give us a little bow round roll. Reason number 43 is For the Photos.
That is the most exciting title of a podcast episode that you could ever think.
But it will be exciting.
This is a special episode. We're not just going to go, hey, you should go and take a photo of the Cliffs of Moher. Hey, you should go and take a blah, blah. This is a special episode. There's something pretty cool happening, I think.
We're pumped.
And we are going to have some actual really, really, really awesome and photos that we own alongside it. I'm not going to give any more details.
Don't,
but it's exciting.
Don't. No,
it's exciting.
You've already said too much. Thank you so much for listening. We want to remind you to subscribe on Apple Podcasts for upcoming episodes. Until next one, everybody.
Slán mála.